morning, everyone. You're listening to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores on 91.7 FM. I'm your host, Katie Service, and this is a recap of all of the news from the University of Connecticut from this past week. This broadcast is in collaboration with UConn's newspaper, The Daily Campus, and UConn's student-run television station, UCTV. Husky Nation News is a broadcast that informs the public about recent news and events within and around the UConn area. It will include original reports from the WHUS News Committee, the Daily Campus, and news packages from UCTV. We will also be discussing local and global news, what events are coming up in the store's Mansfield areas, and we'll provide some insight on UConn's fall and winter athletic teams. Now we're going to get right into it this morning with some news from the Daily Campus about a new one-year MBA program that is being offered by the School of Business here at UConn. The new Master of Business Administration degree contains 42 credits and will be available for students to enroll into starting in the summer of 2026. There are 750 MBA students enrolled in either a fully online program or hybrid alternative, according to a story by the Daily Campus. According to UConn Today, the program will offer flexible entry points in the summer, fall, or spring to allow students to go through and complete their program and their degree within a year. Students can choose from one of the following seven concentrations: business analytics, business ethics and compliance, finance, general business, management, and marketing and supply chain management. According to the interim dean of the School of Business, Greg Riley, an AI concentration will be in addition to the program concentration options in 2026. Now we're going to throw it over to Assistant News Director Rhea Kowalski. Rhea, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Katie?
I'm great. Can you tell us what's going on in the local area?
Yes. So, as we all know, it has been cold and flu season. Much of us have been scheduling or seeking to schedule medical appointments, especially because everyone will be home for break. This first story affects UConn Health, as the popular health insurance company, Aetna, are in the middle of a complicated contract negotiation. As of right now, UConn Health has considered to be out of network for many patients with Aetna insurance. According to NBC Connecticut, UConn Health has been out of network since Monday for many Aetna members. They have yet to seek a deal after months of negotiation. It has been reported that 15,000 patients were affected, and some have said that their appointments have been canceled or they are paying more and have been forced to find new providers. According to NBC Connecticut, in a statement that while Aetna was negotiating a contract, UConn was asking for significantly higher reimbursement rates, which would result in higher costs for patients. UConn has also said that it receives lower reimbursement rates than any other insurance company. UConn also clarified that some patients can qualify for a continuation of network rates for a limited time, and emergency care is always considered in-network. The next story I have comes from the Daily Campus writer Kevin Gwannon, who covered a protest earlier this week that involved protesters dressing as in inflatable costumes to express their opinions on UConn's handling of academic freedom. This protest was held on Monday, December 1st, and included students and faculty members outside of the Homer Babbage Library. According to the Daily Campus, Ariel Lombe, who is a professor at the Waterbury campus and was dressed in an inflatable frog costume, said that they were struck on how, quote, scared the administration was of their message, which sparked a playful idea of inflatable costumes. This fear, they say, comes from a protest that happened earlier in the semester on September 10th and October 20th, involving UConn's removal of protesters that were involved with the AAUP and GEU. This protest also involved flyers being distributed, which criticized UConn's request from UConn AAUP for amplified sound during April 17th. Rally were denied. According to the Daily Campus, the flyer wrote, quote, UConn is so scared of free speech, they forced a U.S. senator to shout at a crowd of over 250 people, end quote. This was in reference to Senator Richard Blumenthal's appearance at the April 17th protest, where he could not use a megaphone. The article ended off by stating that the costumes took inspiration from the No Kings protest and a quote from Senator Heather Summers, who expressed interest in seeing what inspiration others take from this protest. Ending off with something students can look forward to is an official statement from UConn spokesperson Stephanie Reitz, who announced UConn will be freezing its tuition rates for the 2026 to 2027 school year. According to Stephanie Reitz, this will be the second straight tuition freeze in a row to ensure that the institution remains an affordable option for families who are and competitively priced against other institutions. Because of this freeze, the university will be seeking revenue from non-tuition sources and will achieve this through its financial sustainability plan and its strategic enrollment management plan. The plan to freeze the tuition for the academic year of 2026 to 2027 was approved on Wednesday, as well as avoiding an increase to the general university fee, which was the largest mandatory fee outside of the optional housing and dining fees. The university general fee covers the One Card office, cultural centers, and other student organizations, as well as fraternity and sorority development, etc. It is also important to note that there will be a slight increase to the student health and wellness, infrastructure maintenance, transit, technology, and student activity fees. A detailed list of the increased fees and correlated specific services that are funded by revenue can be found on UConn Today and under the article addressing UConn freezing rates for a second consecutive year. I'm Rhea Kowalski, and that's all I have for local news. Katie, back to you.
Thank you so much, Rhea. Now, there's something we mentioned back on our first show of November about the Manchester Jazz Festival and its 10th anniversary this year. The festival will be taking place on Saturday, which is tomorrow, at 6:30 p.m., as well as on Sunday, December 7th at 1 p.m. at Cheney Hall, located on 177 Hartford Road. Again, we talked about this a bit earlier in the month in November, and just thought we would remind you all that that will be happening. And UConn drum kit professor Jonathan Barber and his band Vision Ahead will be performing. So now to get into what's going on in the state and what's going on globally. There has been a follow-up on what's been going on with SNAP benefits here in the state of Connecticut, and Attorney General William Tong joined 21 other state attorneys general to sue the U.S. Department of Agriculture. This is in response to the new rules released by the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise known as SNAP, that will prohibit aid to certain immigrants regardless of their legal status, according to the Daily Campus's Associate News Editor Pierce Colfer. These rule changes come from a memo released by the USDA on October 31st describing the changes to eligibility under the One Big Beautiful Bill. According to the press release, refugees, asylum recipients, and others admitted under humanitarian protection programs are ineligible for SNAP benefits. The press release states, quote, federal statutes make clear that refugees, asylees, humanitarian parolees, individuals whose deportations have been withheld, and other vulnerable legal immigrants become eligible for SNAP once they obtain their green cards and meet standard program requirements. The press release states that the misapplication of the agency's regulations as an inciting factor for the multi-state lawsuit. Quote, federal rules give states a 120-day grace period after new guidance is issued to adjust their systems without facing severe financial penalties, this release states. The USDA is now claiming that the period expired on November 1st, just one day after the guidance was released and before states even had a single business day to review it, end quote. The lawsuit was started by the New York and Oregon attorneys general, and Tong joined the lawsuit along with attorneys general from California, Colorado, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Nevada, New Jersey, New Mexico, North Carolina, Rhode Island, Vermont, Washington, Wisconsin, and the District of Columbia. Now in other news, the Trump administration may potentially block an executive order that would restrict states from enforcing their own AI regulations. The current proposal would have federal agencies, such as the Department of Justice, to review and pressure states to relax their regulations through legal challenges or federal funding limitations, according to the Daily Campus's Karen Salazar Mercado. At the moment, California, Colorado, Texas, and Utah have enacted laws requiring companies to evaluate artificial intelligence discrimination risks in areas like hiring, providing housing, lending money, and healthcare. Some supporters of the draft executive order argue that AI technology is national and global and should not be governed by a patchwork of conflicting state rules. However, the Bloomberg Law commentary defending the draft order argues that, quote, a state law ends at its borders, end quote, and that states should not attempt to regulate technologies whose impacts cross state lines. This draft order is still being reviewed and has not yet been finalized. According to the Associated Press, internal discussions have slowed due to legal concerns and the political sensitivity of overriding state authority. In the meantime, Congress is finding another way to replace state control over AI. A handful of Republican lawmakers are attempting to enforce changes to state AI regulations through the 2026 National Defense Authorization Act, which would temporarily halt state-level regulations. Now, that's all that I have for state and global news this week. Now, we are going to be throwing it over to sports director Vinny Carbone. Vinny, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Katie, how are you?
Great. We missed you last week when you weren't here.
Yes.
Due to being sick.
As Ree was talking about, well, a lot of people are scheduling appointments, getting flu shots, getting sick. So, yeah, I had something hit me. Something hit me well. Mm. Not sure what it was, but something hit me. But now we can finally transition into Carbone's Court. I'm your host, Vinny Carbone. Let's get right into it. It is the final show of the semester. So we're going to end with some positive things, but in the UConn sports world, there are some pretty sad things that we got to talk about. So we'll get into that. First of all, men's soccer, they had a great run this year. 12-5-4 overall record, making it to the third round of the NCAA tournament. And they unfortunately fell to number 4-ranked Maryland. But they had a lot of positive things coming out of the season. They had some great young stars. Austin Brummett have a breakout season, and we're excited to see what he can do next season. And now onto football. One of the most sad news in all of UConn sports. Our coach, Jim Mora, has left. He took another job at Colorado State to coach their football team. He's been here for the last few seasons, and he's really done a great job with this football program here. I mean, they had a 9-3 overall record this season. They were undefeated at home, and Jim Mora has brought multiple bowl games and multiple winning seasons to this UConn program. He's really shaped it into something great. So we have one more bowl game left for this football team, and Jim Mora is not going to be the coach. Our offensive coordinator will take his position in that final game of the season. But now, no more negative. Let's talk about positive. UConn basketball, the women's basketball team, has been doing what they've been doing for the last 50-plus years. They are 8-0 to start this season, with only one game being within a 30-point margin in their last 7 games. Only one game within a 30-point margin. Insane. That game was against number 6-ranked Michigan at Mohegan Sun, and that Michigan team gave UConn a run for their money. Thankfully, AZ Fudd had a 31-point performance, and UConn squeezed out a win in that one, 72-69. And men's basketball are 7-1, not as perfect as the women's team, 8-0, but they are playing a lot of ranked teams. They lost to a 4th-ranked Arizona team in Gamble a few weeks ago, and UConn has played 4 ranked opponents thus far, beating 3 of them, which were BYU, Illinois, and Kansas. And those games were all not at Gamble or Hartford. They were at either neutral sites or away sites. So that's just great that UConn can travel and play on the road and win these big games. They take on East Texas A&M tonight at Gamble at 7:30 p.m. Now into the trivia section. This question I asked, I think, 2 weeks ago now. But the question I asked 2 weeks ago, what university did Gino Auriemma attend? And the correct answer to that question was Westchester University. I've never heard of it, but that's where he went. It was he got a bachelor's degree in 1981, I believe, from Westchester University. But now on to the question this week. And this one, a little bit themed. I mean, I know Wicked for Good just came out a few weeks ago, and UConn men's basketball traveled to Kansas to play Kansas just a few days ago. So it's going to be a question related to that. If you were watching the game, you might know this. What is UConn men's basketball overall record versus Kansas? What is their overall record? I'll tell you, it's 5 total games. And they just won that one, so they have at least one win. But what is their overall record? You'll find the answer. Maybe I'll tell it at the end of the episode, because there won't be one next semester, but I'll say it at the end of the show. And that's all I got for Carbone's Court. Katie, back to you.
Thank you so much, Vinny. I think some of us in this room might know the answer to the trivia question, so I think we should reveal that at the very end of today's show, just so we don't leave people on a month-long cliffhanger, you know?
We'll do.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that. Now we're going to get into our last interview segment for the semester. Oh, fun fact, guys, I just searched it up. I asked Vinny, what do you know where Emma's major was in college? Apparently he studied political science.
Interesting.
Was not expecting that.
Related to basketball at all?
Nope. And Westchester University is in Pennsylvania. There you go. Anyway, back to what I was saying before I got distracted. We have our final interview segment for the semester, and I'm so excited to have Jack Wright, the editor-in-chief of Nutmeg Publishing, here with us. Jack, how are you today?
I'm great, Katie. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm great. I'm so happy that you're here. I love everything that Nutmeg does, so I'm really excited to talk a bit about it and talk about a really exciting release that you guys are having today. So if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself to all of our listeners and telling us a bit about what you do at Nutmeg, that'd be great.
Yeah, so as Katie said, I'm Jack Wright. I'm the editor-in-chief of Nutmeg Publishing. We've produced the UConn's official yearbook since 1915, and then since 2015 we've released a semesterly magazine that covers a wide array of topics related to UConn. I started at Nutmeg my sophomore year as a writer, and then worked my way up. I went from a writer to being a copy editor, and then now I'm editor-in-chief. So it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. I'm really, really excited about this semester's mag, and then the 2026 yearbook obviously is my yearbook. So definitely putting a lot of work into that. But
yeah. So what, like, you just said that you've been involved in Nutmeg for a long time. So considering that you started out as just a writer and then you became a copy editor and now you're editor-in-chief, what does a typical day in your life look like now as the editor-in-chief in comparison to what it was when you first started?
It's a lot busier, I'll say that. A lot more replying to emails and that kind of thing. Obviously, now I have to deal with a lot of business aspects of things, talking with our printing companies, and now I have to deal a lot more with design and photography, something which I didn't have to do at all when I started as a writer. So my role has definitely become more broad in what I have to deal with. But it's a lot of team management. It's a lot of making sure everything works smoothly and basically making sure all the pieces are in place to make sure that we get our publications out on time. Mm-hmm. Which is the big thing. I like to think that I'm the catalyst for everyone else to do their creative job, and I'm kind of in the background helping make sure that everything happens.
Yeah.
So it ebbs and flows, really. When it gets to magazine season in particular, that's our busiest time of the year. And then it's all hands on deck, making sure that we can get our magazine out on time, which especially in the fall semester can be difficult with Thanksgiving break. It's a lot of fun. I really do love it. And getting more and more involved each year has been a treat. So
yeah. Now, when it comes to the magazine schedule, do you guys release one per semester, or is it one per like quarterly? Because I know you guys also do the yearbook. So how many magazines do you guys put out a year?
So we do 2 magazines a year, one each semester, and typically we have a magazine release event like the one we're having today at the end of each semester. So this, I'll plug the mag a little bit.
Absolutely,
now,
go for
but
it.
This semester's magazine is on student jobs at UConn, which is a little bit of a change of what we've typically covered. The last few magazines have focused on things like athletics and arts and fashion and sustainability and those kind of things, whereas this magazine focuses a lot more on the student experience, and because a lot of people surprisingly have jobs on campus. So we really made an effort to make it a bit more of a UConn-centric mag, to really hit home a topic that a lot of students can relate to. So I think we've done a really good job doing that this semester.
Yeah. Do you think you could dive in a bit into your busy season? Because you just mentioned before that, you know, creating a magazine, it's a lot of work, a lot of hands on deck, and a lot of moving parts. So what has it been looking like these past few weeks to finish, finalize the magazine and putting it all together?
Well, we start mainly with kind of our ideas. We make a ladder. Our magazine managing editor, Sarah, and I will go through and we'll think of stories, and anyone else at Nutmeg that wants to contribute story ideas. And then we'll finalize our list of ideas at the start, and then our creative director, Michelle, will come up with a style guide, basically a guide on how she wants the designers to design the yearbook. And then we'll start the writers will start scheduling interviews, the photographers will schedule their shoots, whether it has to be a studio shoot or for the student jobs magazine, obviously a lot of action shots of people doing their jobs. So getting those in is really the first step, and it's not until we have the copy and the photo that the design can start. So the design's always a lot more crunched up, because we have to wait until all the photos are edited and everything's in order. But then we have a team of designers who do a great job of staying on top of things, and they do great work. But it's a lot of nitpicking, especially my job and the magazine managing editor's job is looking through the spreads and seeing what design aspects work, what design aspects don't. And then for this semester in particular, the last week before we had to submit was chaotic in terms of just playing around with all sorts of different ideas with design and that. But we were able to send it off eventually, but yeah.
So yeah, that's really interesting, because it seems like there are so many moving parts when it comes to putting a magazine together that people don't always realize, especially because you're all students at the same time. Like, no one is doing this, like, strictly on, you know, just Nutmeg, and that's all that I'm focusing on. Everyone has classes on top of that. So what has it been like to manage your coursework as well as being the editor-in-chief?
It's interesting. It's certainly very difficult. Nutmeg are very small. We currently have about 27 employees, and most of those are writers, designers, and photographers. So we have a 8-person executive board, and most positions focus solely on copy, solely on design. We have a marketing coordinator, business manager, all those kind of things. And so there's actually very few people that deal with every single issue of every single aspect of the magazine. It's mainly just Sarah and I. So it gets very... It kind of takes over my life a little bit when it gets to busy season. But I kind of made a point of clearing out my schedule, because I knew I wanted the editor-in-chief position. So when I scheduled classes, I tried to make it as light as possible. But what's nice is that we have our own office. I can be in the Nutmeg office and do homework at the same time. So it's nice having that space, and that kind of helps me be productive and stay on track. So I have office hours, so I have dedicated Nutmeg time as well throughout the week that I'm in the office and I'm focused solely on Nutmeg work, which helps. There's all sorts of things that show up throughout the week, last-minute things that I need to do. So I kind of have to drop everything and go sort something related to Nutmeg. But other than that, it's been all right dealing with managing classes. I just have to be very proactive and make sure that my stuff gets done first before I can... like go full in on Nutmeg related stuff.
Yeah.
Going back to when you first got involved with Nutmeg, can like anyone get involved at any point in the semester, and do they have to become like hired, or can they just be like a committee member? Like, what would you say, like, for people who want to just get involved, how would you say like the commitment level is?
So every position's hired and is paid at Nutmeg. Which is, we like the way it functions. We get really high quality applicants all the time. Mainly job openings are over the summer for most of our positions, but we typically have a high turnover rate. So because people graduate and people move up into the executive board and all that kind of stuff shifts around. So we're not necessarily open as an organization to just anyone. There is a hiring process and we list jobs on 1220. As do most of the campus jobs. But then there's also a lot of room to grow. When you get to the higher level positions, like my position or magazine managing editor or yearbook managing editor, those are, we have a organization-wide vote for those positions. But yeah, it's, we do it. We hire everyone, we pay everyone, which is nice. Occasionally jobs open up throughout the, so throughout the semester. We have a photographer position opening up and a writer position opening up over sometime in December.
Okay.
So there's plenty of opportunity to get involved and to apply, especially for underclassmen, lowerclassmen. There's always going to be job openings opening up each year. So
now let's jump back a bit to our current magazine topic that we were discussing before. Congratulations on your magazine release day, because that's today.
Yes, thank
you. So, very excited to be checking it out, because, you know, we're all students, and everyone in studio right now actually works for a Tier 3 organization, so it's really cool to have some representation there, at least from my perspective. I didn't know if you wanted to talk a bit more about what the release day is going to look like, what you guys have going on, where students can get a copy of the magazine, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, of course. The fall semester magazine release events are usually a little bit more low-key. We're just going to be tabling in the student union from 12:30 to 2:30 today outside the game room, typically where a lot of organizations table in the student union. And then we're hoping in the spring to have a bit more of a proper release party kind of vibe. So very much looking forward to that. But for now, especially because it's cold outside, we don't really want to be sitting outside for 2 hours. So we're just going to be hanging out in the union, passing it out. So yeah, from 12:30 to 2:30.
Nice. Now, before I ask my final question, I didn't know if anyone else in the room had a question for Jack. So I'm opening it up.
No, I'll ask my question after your question.
Okay. Rhea, do you have any other questions for Jack?
No, I'm excited to check out this magazine sometime later today if I get the chance.
So in like 45 minutes.
I'll make sure I bring a copy and put it on the lobby table for anyone, any WHOS community member. Now, my final question for you, Jack. We've talked a lot off the mic about just getting Nutmeg out there, being a bit promotional, and trying to educate students on what you guys do. So what is something about Nutmeg that you think students aren't aware of that they should be aware of? And why?
I think this has been the struggle over the last few years, and I think we're doing a much better job of getting the word out there. But the yearbook is at the heart of what we do, so every student, every fee-paying store's undergraduate gets a free yearbook mailed to their permanent address when they graduate. Don't have to pay anything. All anyone has to do is make sure that their address is up to date on student admin. We also have senior portraits. So if someone wants to be in the yearbook, they can book an appointment with our photography studio, Lauren Studios, and they can get their picture taken for free to go into the yearbook. So the yearbook's free. It exists. If you graduate from stores, you're going to get one regardless. So it helps having your photo in there as well. So a main thing for us is pushing that and making sure people know that they can get their photo taken, they can be in the yearbook, and then they can get the yearbook for free.
Yeah. And when it comes to senior portraits, is that something that only happens in the fall semester or only in the spring, or is it throughout the semesters?
It happens both semesters. We have 2 weeks planned already in the spring for senior portraits in the student union. Seniors should be receiving emails from Lauren Studios with a link to sign up. The current spots for the spring semester aren't open up yet, but they will be opening up.
Okay.
So there is plenty opportunity to get your photo taken. We're planning on adding more photos, more slots as well, depending on what space we can get and all that kind of stuff. But there's definitely going to be plenty of opportunity in the spring as well for people to get their portrait taken.
That's great. All right. Now, I'm going to turn all the mics back on. Jack, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so happy we finally got you on the show. We got to talk a bit about Nutmeg and what you guys do. Because sometimes I think that you guys, out of all the tier threes, sometimes don't always get the recognition you deserve. So I was really happy we can have you on, especially for the last episode of the semester. And yeah. Now, Vinny, what was your question?
Yeah. Well, first I want to say, I think it's like everyone that works on campus. I mean, I know there's a good chunk because you guys, this is what your magazine is focusing on. But everyone that works and that has a job on campus and does like all their schoolwork too, they're just like, those are the cool people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they do, like they study, they focus on academics, but then they also, you know, got to have money. You got to have like an income, and they yeah. also work. It's just like, it's a lot. It's a lot for a lot of people. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of dedication and effort, but it's like, it's cool. Those people are the cool ones, you know? Mm-hmm. Not saying if you don't have a job, you're not cool, but you're not cool. Kind of.
Just, wow.
But you know what I mean. But my question, let's go around. Everyone's number one, Spotify Wrapped. Mine was Defying Gravity from Wicked the Musical.
Oh, are we doing song or are we doing artist?
No, just do your song. Just do your top song.
Okay, now I gotta
what was your top song? I know you said, or do you artist or whatever you know. Or what was your favorite song of the year?
My favorite song of the year was probably Slide Away by Oasis. Oasis was my number one band, but obviously with the reunion, that was basically my entire personality for the year.
Did you go to one of the shows?
I did. I went to the first night at MetLife.
Wow. Oh my goodness. That must have been amazing.
Wow.
Oh, I
awesome.
Bet. MetLife is a great location.
Oh yeah, it was a great place to see them for sure.
Katie, what was yours?
My top song was Nice to Each Other by Olivia Dean, and my top artist was SZA.
Oh.
And I was in the top 0.02%.
Nice.
Of SZA listeners?
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
I loved SZA in high school. That was like my whole personality. But I feel called out by my Spotify song, okay? It was Pushing It Down and Praying by Lizzie McAlpine.
That's such a good song.
It's a good song, but like, oh my goodness, that definitely was just from me crying for one night or something. Like,
or
like
every night that you put it.
Yeah, probably like, and it was like a crazy amount of minutes that I've listened to it too.
Really?
So I was like, all right. So that was crazy, but my top artist was still Woozy.
Mm.
So. Took a nonchalant dub there.
There you go.
Yeah.
Our nonchalant queen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Lizzie McAlpine, shout out. Amazing artist.
Yeah.
Love her. Her new album, Fire.
I have not listened to it. I only listened to Pushing It Down.
That's it? Anything else from the album Older?
Oh,
Older
actually,
and Wiser?
Soccer Practice.
That one's pretty good, too.
So kind of depressing out here, but
I need to get you on to her music.
Okay.
I need to like have you. I need to give you some recs.
That'll
we'll
be
do
my
after the show.
Winter break homework.
There you go. Yeah. Winter break homework. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, thank you all so much for tuning in to our last episode. I know we keep saying that, but it doesn't feel like it's actually our last one for the semester. Thank you to our news partners, The Daily Campus, UConn's student-run newspaper, and UCTV, UConn's student-run television station. Special thank you to Ethan Smith, who is the creator of our theme music. I'm Katie Service.
I'm Rick Wolski.
And I'm Vinny Carbone.
And you have been listening to Husky Nation News on WHRS Stores on 91.7 FM. We will see you all in the next semester, Husky Nation listeners. I hope you all have a great winter break. Enjoy the holidays. Stay safe. And we will see you all back in January.